Cloth or silver or horse flesh will I give you. Sasha, you remember, might be rich in renown, but he must beg his bread and tend the herbs in his own garden. Whatever Kolya might have replied was drowned by an exclamation of satisfaction, for yet another rabbit hung in a snare, its mottled autumn coat streaked with dirt. While his son bent to extricate it, Pyotr raised his head and went suddenly still. The air smelled of new death. Pios, Pyotr's boarhound, shrank against his master's shins, whining like a puppy. Kolya, said Pyotr. Something in his father's tone sent the young man to his feet, a flash in his black eyes. I smell it, he said after a moment's pause. What ails the dog? For Pyos whined and trembled and looked eagerly back toward the village. Pyotr shook his head. He was casting from side to side, almost like a scent hound himself. He said no word, but pointed. A splash of blood in the leaf litter around their feet. Not the rabbits. Pyotr gestured peremptorily at the dog. The boarhound whined and slunk forward. Kolya hung a little to the left, owl silent as his father. They came cautiously round a stand of trees, into a small, scrubby clearing, grim with decaying leaves. It had been a buck. A haunch lay almost at Pyotr's feet, trailing blood and tendon. The main part of the carcass lay a little way off, the entrails burst and spreading, stinking even in the cold. The gore gave neither man pause, though the buck's horned head lolled near their feet, tongue dangling. But they exchanged a speaking glance, for nothing in those woods could so mutilate a creature. And what beast would kill a fat autumn buck but leave the meat? Pyotr squatted in the mud, eyes skimming the ground. The buck ran, and the hunter gave chase. The buck had been running hard and was favoring a foreleg. He bounded into the clearing here. Pyotr was moving as he spoke, half-crouched. One leap, two, and then a blow from the side struck him down. Pyotr paused. Pyos crouched on his belly at the very edge of the clearing, never taking his eyes off his master. But what struck the blow, he muttered. Kolya had read a similar tale in the mud. No tracks, he said. His long knife hissed as it slid free of its scabbard. None, nor any signs that someone tried to sweep them away. Look to the dog, said Pyotr. Pyos had risen from his crouch and was staring at a gap between the trees. Every hair on his rough-coated spine stood on end, and he was growling low between bare teeth. As one, both men spun, Pyotr's knife in his hand almost before he willed it. Briefly he thought he saw movement, a darker shadow in the gloom, but then it was gone. Pyos barked once, high and sharp, a sound of fearful defiance. Pyotr snapped his fingers at his dog. Kolya turned with him. They crossed the blood-smeared leaf mold and made for the village without a word. A day later, when Rodion knocked on Konstantin's door, the priest was inspecting his paints by candlelight. The ends and dribbles of mixed color turned to mold in the damp. There was daylight outside, but the priest's windows were small, and the roar of the rain held back the sun. The room would have been dim if not for the candles. Too many candles, Rodion thought, a terrible waste. Father, bless, said Rodion. God be with you, said Konstantin. The room was cold. The priest had wrapped a blanket round his thin shoulders. He did not offer Rodion one. Pyotr Vladimirovich and his sons have gone hunting, said Rodion. But they will not speak of their quarry. Said they nothing in your hearing? Not in my hearing, no, replied Konstantin. The rain poured down without. Rodian frowned. I cannot imagine what they would bring their boar spears for, while leaving the dogs behind. And this is cruel weather for riding. Constantine said nothing. Well, God grant them success, whatever it is, Rodian persevered. I must leave in 2 days, and I do not care to meet whatever put that look in Pyotr Vladimirovich's eye. I will pray for your safety on the road, said Constantine curtly. God keep you, replied Rodian, ignoring the dismissal. I know you do not like your reflections disturbed, but I would ask your counsel, brother. Ask, said Constantine. Pyotr Vladimirovich wishes his daughter to take vows, said Rodian. He has charged me, with words and money, that I might go to Moscow, to the Ascension, and prepare them for her coming. He says she will be sent with the tribute goods, as soon as there is enough snow for sledges. A pious duty, brother, said Constantine. But he had looked up from his paints. What need of counsel? Because she is not a girl formed for convents, said Rodian. A blind man could see it. Constantine set his jaw, and Rodian saw with surprise the priest's face ablaze with anger. She cannot marry, said Constantine. Only sin awaits her in this world. Better she retire. She will pray for her father's soul. Pyotr Vladimirovich is an old man. He will be glad of her prayers when he goes to God. This was all very well. Nonetheless, Rodian knew a pang of conscience. Pyotr's second daughter reminded him of brother Alexander. Though Sasha was a monk, he had never stayed long at the Lavra. He rode the breadth of Rus on his good war horse, tricking and charming and fighting by turns. He wore a sword on his back and was advisor to princes. But such a life was not possible for a woman who took the veil. Well, I will do it, said Rodian reluctantly. Pyotr Vladimirovich has been my host, and I can hardly do less. But, brother, I wish you would change his mind. Someone surely can be persuaded to marry Vasilisa Petrovna. I do not think she will last long in a convent. Wild birds die in cages. And so, snapped Constantine, blessed are those who linger only a little in this mire of wickedness before going into the presence of God. I only hope her soul is prepared when the meeting comes. Now, brother, I would like to pray. Without a word, Rodian crossed himself and slipped out the door, blinking in the feeble daylight. Well, I am sorry for the girl, he thought, and then uneasily, how thick the shadows lie in that room. Pyotr and Kolya took their men hunting not once, but several times before the snow. The rain would not cease, though it grew steadily colder, and their strength faltered in the long wet days. But try as they might, they never found so much as a trace of the thing that had torn the buck to pieces. The men began to mutter and at last to protest. Weariness vied with loyalty, and no one was sorry when the frost put an end to the hunting. But that was when the first dog disappeared. She was a tall bitch, a good whelper, and fearless before the boar, but they found her near the palisade, headless and bloody in the snow. The only tracks near her frozen body were her own running paw prints. Folk took to going into the woods in twos, with axes in their belts. But then a pony disappeared, while it stood tied to a sled for hauling firewood. Its owner's son, returning with an armful of logs, saw the empty traces and a great swath of scarlet splashed across the muddy earth. He dropped his logs, even his axe, and ran for the village. Dread settled over the village, a clinging, muttering dread, tenacious as cobwebs. Chapter 19. Nightmares. November roared in with black leaves and gray snow. On a morning like dirty glass, Father Constantine stood beside his window, tracing with his brush the slim foreleg of St. George's white stallion. His work absorbed him, and all was still. But somehow, the silence listened. Constantine found himself straining to hear.
Lord, will you not speak to me?
When someone scratched at his door, Constantine's hand jerked and almost smeared the paint.
Come in, he snarled, flinging his brush aside.
Anna Ivanovna it was, surely, with baked milk and adoring tedious eyes. But it was not Anna Ivanovna.
Father, bless, said Agafya, the serving girl.
Constantine made the sign of the cross.
God be with you, but he was angry.
Do not take offense, Batyushka, the girl whispered, wringing her work-hardened hands. She hovered at the doorway. If I may have only a moment.
The priest pressed his lips together. Before him, Saint George bestrode the world on an oaken panel. His steed had only three legs. The fourth, as yet unpainted, would be raised in an elegant curve to trample a serpent's head.
What do you wish to say to me? Constantine tried to make his voice gentle.
He did not entirely succeed. She paled and shrank away, but she did not go.
We have been true Christians, Batyushka, she stammered. We take the sacrament and venerate the icons, but it has never gone so hard with us. Our gardens drowned in the summer rain. We will be hungry before the season turns.
She paused and licked her lips.
I wondered, I cannot help but wonder, have we offended the old ones? Chernobog, perhaps, who loves blood. My grandmother always said it would come to disaster if ever he turned against us, and I fear now for my son.
She looked at him in mute supplication.
Better to be afraid, growled Constantine.
His fingers itched for his brush. He fought for patience.
It shows your true repentance. This is the time of trial, when God will know his loyal servants. You must hold fast, and you shall see kingdoms presently, the like of which you do not imagine. The things you speak of are false, illusions to tempt the unwary. Hold to truth, and all will be well.
He turned away, reaching for his paints, but her voice came again.
But I don't need a kingdom, Batyushka, just enough to feed my son through the winter. Marina Ivanovna kept the old ways, and our children never starved.
Constantine's face assumed an expression not unlike that of the spear-wielding saint before him. Agafya stumbled against the doorframe.
And now God will have his reckoning, he hissed.
His voice flowed like black water with a rime of ice.
Think you that just because it was delayed 2 years or 10, that God was not wroth at such blasphemy? The wheel grinds slowly.
Agafya quivered like a netted bird.
Please, she whispered.
She seized his hand, kissed the spattered fingers.
Will you beg forgiveness for us then? Not for my own sake, but for my son.
As I can, he said more gently, putting a hand on her bowed head. But you must first ask it yourself.
Yes, yes, Batyushka, she said, looking up with a face full of gratitude.
When at last she hurried out into the gray afternoon and the door clicked shut behind her, the shadows on the wall seemed to stretch like waking cats.
Well done,
the voice echoed in Constantine's bones. The priest froze, every nerve alight.
Above all, they must fear me, so that they can be saved.
Constantine flung his brush aside and knelt.
I wish only to please you, Lord.
I am pleased, said the voice.
I have tried to set these people on the path of righteousness, said Constantine. I would only ask, Lord. That is, I have wanted to ask.
The voice was infinitely gentle.
What would you ask?
Please, said Constantine, let me see my task here finished. I would carry your word to the ends of the earth, if only you asked it. But the forest is so small.
He bowed his head, waiting.
But the voice laughed in loving delight, so that Constantine thought his soul would flee his body in joy.
"Of course you shall go," it said. "One more winter. Only sacrifice and be faithful. Then you shall show the world my glory, and I will be with you forever."
"Only tell me what I must do," said Constantine. "I will be faithful."
"I desire you to invoke my presence when you speak," said the voice.
Another man would have heard the eagerness in it.
"And when you pray, call me with every breath and call me by name. I am the bringer of storms. I would be present among you and give you grace."
"It shall be done," said Constantine fervently. "Just as you say, it shall be done. Only never leave me again."
All the candles wavered with something very like a long sigh of satisfaction.
"Obey me always," returned the voice, "and I will never leave you."
The next day, the sun drowned in sodden clouds and cast ghostly light over a world stripped of color. It began to snow at daybreak. Piotr's household went shivering to the little church and huddled together inside. The church was dark except for the candles. "Almost," thought Vasya. She could hear the snow outside, burying them until spring. It shut off a light, but the candles lit the priest. The bones of his face cast elegant shadows. He wore a look more remote than his icons, and he had never been so beautiful. The icon screen was finished. The risen Christ, the final icon, was enthroned above the door. He sat in judgment above a stormy earth with an expression that Vasya could not read.
"I invoke thee," said Constantine, low and clear. "God who has called me up to be his servant, the voice out of darkness, lover of storms, be thou present among us."
And then louder, he began the service.
"Blessed be God," Constantine said.
His eyes were great dark hollows, but his voice seemed to flicker with fire. The service went on and on. When he spoke, the people forgot the icy damp and the grinning specter of starvation. Earthly troubles were as nothing when that voice touched them. The Christ above the doors seemed to raise his hand in benediction.
"Listen," said Constantine.
His voice dropped so that they had to strain to hear.
"There is evil among us."
The congregation looked at each other.
"It creeps into our souls in the night, in the silence. It is waiting for the unwary."
Irina crept closer to Vasya, and Vasya put an arm around her.
"Only faith," Constantine continued, "only prayer, only God can save you."
His voice rose on each word.
"Fear God and repent. It is your only escape from damnation. Otherwise, you will burn. You will burn."
Anna screamed. Her scream echoed the length of the little church. Her eyes bulged beneath the bluish lids.
"No," she screamed. "Oh God, not here, not here."
Her voice seemed to split the walls and multiply, so that there were 100 women shrieking. In the instant before the room fell into chaos, Vasya followed her stepmother's pointing finger. The risen Christ over the door was smiling at them now, when before he had been solemn. His two dog teeth dented his lower lip, but instead of his two eyes, he only had one. The other side of his face was seamed with blue scars, and the eye was a socket, crudely sewn. Somewhere, Vasya thought, fighting the fear that closed her throat, she had seen that face before. But she had no time to think. The folk on either side of her clapped their hands to their ears, flung themselves face down, or shoved their way toward the safety of the narthex. Anna was left standing alone. She laughed and wept, clawing the air.
No one would touch her. Her screams echoed off the walls. Constantine shoved his way to her side and struck her across the face. She subsided, choking, but the noise seemed to echo on and on, as though the icons themselves were screaming. Vasya seized Irina in the first moil of chaos to keep her from being swept off her feet. An instant later, Alyosha appeared and wrapped strong arms around Dunya, who was small as a child, fragile as November leaves. The four clung together. The people milled and shouted.
"I must go to Mother," said Irina, squirming.
"Wait, little bird," said Vasya. "You would only be trampled."
"Mother of God," Alyosha said. "If anyone learns Irina's mother takes such feats, no one will ever marry her."
"No one will know," snapped Vasya. Her sister had turned very pale. She glared at her brother as the crowd pushed them against the wall. She and Alyosha shielded Dunya and Irina with their bodies. Vasya looked again at the iconostasis. Now it was as it had always been. Christ sat in his throne above the world, his hand raised to bless. Had she imagined the other face? But if she had, why had Anna screamed?
"Silence!"
Constantine's voice rang like a dozen bells. Everyone froze. He stood before the iconostasis and raised a hand, a living echo of the image of Christ above his head.
"Fools!" he thundered. "Are you children to be afraid of a woman screaming? Get up, all of you! Be silent! God will protect us!"
They crept together like chastened children. What Pyotr's bellowing had not accomplished, the voice of the priest did. They swayed nearer him. Anna stood shuddering, weeping, ashen as the sky at dawn. The only face paler in that church belonged to the priest himself. The candlelight filled the nave with strange shadows. There again, one flung across the iconostasis that was not the shadow of a man.
God, thought Vasya, when the service haltingly renewed.
Here? Charity cannot come into churches. They are creatures of this world, and church is for the next. Yet she had seen the shadow. Pyotr led his wife home as soon as could be managed. Her daughter undressed her and put her to bed. But Anna cried and retched and cried and would not stop. At last Irina, desperate, went back to the church. She found Father Constantine kneeling alone before the icon screen. After the service that day, the people had kissed his hand and begged him to save them. He looked at peace then, even triumphant. But now Irina thought he looked like the loneliest person in the world.
"Will you come to my mother?" she whispered.
Constantine jerked to his knees, looked around.
"She is weeping," said Irina. "She will not stop."
Constantine did not speak. He was straining all his senses. After the people left the church, God had come to him in the smoke of extinguished candles.
"Beautiful."
The whisper sent the smoke curling in little eddies along the floor.
"They were so frightened."
The voice sounded almost gleeful. Constantine was silent. For an instant, he wondered if he was a madman and the voice had come crawling out of his own heart.
But no, of course not. It is only your wickedness that doubts, Konstantin Nikonovich.
"I am glad you came among us," murmured Constantine under his breath, "to lead your people in righteousness." But the voice had not answered, and now the church was still. Louder, Constantine said to Irina,
"Yes, I will come."
"Here is Father Constantine," said Irina, drawing the priest into her mother's room. "He will comfort you. I will get supper. Vasya is burning the milk already." She ran out.
"The church, Batyushka?"
sobbed Anna Ivanovna when the two were alone.
She lay in her bed wrapped in furs.
The church! Never the church!
What foolishness you talk, said Constantine. The church is protected by God. God alone makes his dwelling in the church, and his saints and his angels.
But I saw...
You saw nothing!
Constantine laid a hand on her cheek. She shivered. His voice dropped lower, hypnotic. He touched her lips with a forefinger.
You saw nothing, Anna Ivanovna.
She raised one trembling hand and touched his.
I will see nothing if you tell me so, Batyushka.
She blushed like a girl. Her hair was dark with sweat.
Then see nothing, Constantine said.
He pulled his hand away.
I see you, she said.
It was barely a breath.
You are all I see sometimes in this horrible place. With the cold and the monsters and the starving, you are a light to me.
She caught at his hand again. She propped herself on one elbow. Her eyes swam with tears.
Please, Batyushka, she said. I want only to be close.
You are mad, he said. He pushed her hands down and drew away.
She was soft and old. Rotted with fear and disappointed hopes.
You are married. I have given myself to God.
Not that, she cried in despair. Never that. I want you to see me.
Her throat worked, and she stammered.
To see me. You see my stepdaughter. You watch her. As I have watched you, I watch you. Why not me? Why not me?
Her voice rose to a wail.
Hush.
He laid a hand on the door.
I see you. But Anna Ivanovna, there is little to see.
The door was heavy. When closed, it muffled the sound of her weeping. That day, the people stayed near their ovens while the snow flurried down. But Vasya slipped away to see to the horses.
He is coming, said Mish, rolling a wild eye.
Vasya went to her father.
We must bring the horses inside the palisade, she said, tonight before dusk.
Why are you here to burden us, Vasya? Snapped Pyotr. The snow was falling thickly, catching on her hats and shoulders.
You ought to have been gone, long gone and safe.
But... You frighten your suitor, and now you are here, and it is winter.
Vasya did not reply. Indeed, she could not, for she saw suddenly and clearly that her father was afraid. She had never known her father afraid. She wanted to hide in the oven like a child.
Forgive me, father, she said, mastering herself. This winter will pass, as others have passed. But I think that now, at night, we should bring the horses in.
Pyotr drew a deep breath.
You are right, daughter, he said. You are right. Come, I will help you.
The horses settled a little when the gate was shut behind them. Vasya took Mish and Buran into the stable itself, while the less prized horses milled in the dooryard. The little Vasila put his hand in hers.
Do not leave us, Vasya.
I must get my soup, said Vasya. Dunya is calling, but I will come back.
She ate her soup, curled in the back of Misha's narrow stall, and fed the mare her bread. Afterward, Vasya wrapped herself in a horse blanket and counted the shadows on the stable wall. The Vasila sat beside her.
Do not go, Vasya, he said.
When you stay, I remember my strength. And I remember that I am not afraid.
So Vasya stayed, shivering despite the straw and her horse blanket. The night was very cold. She thought she would never sleep. But she must have, for after moonset she awoke freezing. The stable was dark. Even Vasya, cat-eyed, could barely make out Mish standing above her. For a moment all was still. Then from without came a soft chuckle. Mish snorted and backed, tossing her head. The white showed in a ring around her eye. Vasya rose in silence, letting her blanket fall. The cold air sank fangs into her flesh. She crept to the stable door. There was no moon, and fat clouds smothered the stars. The snow was still falling. Creeping over the snow, silent as the flakes, was a man. He darted from shadow to shadow. When he let out his breath, he laughed deep in his throat. Vasya crept closer. She could not see a face, only ragged clothes and a thatch of coarse hair. The man drew near the house and put a hand on the door. Vasya shouted aloud, just as the man flung himself into the kitchen. There was no sound of flesh on wood. He passed through the door like smoke. Vasya ran across the dvor. The yard glittered with virgin snow. The ragged man had left no footprints. The snow was thick and soft. Vasya's limbs felt heavy. Still, she ran, shouting, but before she could come to the house, the man had leaped back into the dooryard, landing animal life on all fours. He was laughing. "Oh," he said, "it has been so long. How sweet are the houses of men! And oh, how she screamed!" He caught sight of Vasya then, and the girl stumbled. She knew the scars, the single gray eye. It was the face on the icon. The face of the sleeper in the woods years ago. How can that be?
"Well, what is this?" the man said.
He paused. She saw memory cross his face.
"I remember a little girl with your eyes, but now you are a woman."
His eye fastened on hers as though he meant to strip a secret from her soul.
"You are the little witch who tempts my servant." "But I did not see."
He came nearer and nearer. Vasya tried to flee, but her feet would not obey. His breath reeked of hot blood. He blew it in waves over her face. She gathered her courage.
"I am no one," she said. "Get out. Leave us be."
His humid fingers flicked out and lifted her chin. "Who are you, girl?" And then lower. "Look at me." In his eye lay madness. Vasya would not look, knew she must not. But his fingers were like an iron trap, and in a moment she would. But then an icy hand seized her, pulled her away. She smelled cold water and crushed pine. Over her head a voice was speaking.
"Not yet, brother," it said. "Go back."
Vasya could see nothing of the speaker, except a curving line of black cloak. But she could see the other, the one-eyed man. He was grinning and cringing and laughing all at once.
"Not yet, but it is done, brother," he said. "It is done."
He winked his good eye at Vasya and was gone. The black cloak around Vasya became the whole world. She was cold and a horse was neighing, and far away someone was screaming. Then Vasya awoke, stiff and shivering on the floor in the stable. Mish pressed her warm nose to the girl's face. But though Vasya was awake, the cry could still be heard. It went on and on. Vasya sprang to her feet, shaking away her nightmare. The horses in stalls whinnied and kicked, splintering the stable walls. The horses in the freezing dvor milled in panic. There was no ragged one-eyed figure. A dream, Vasya thought. Only a dream. She darted among the horses, dodging the heaving bodies. The kitchen was churning like a nest of angry wasps. Her brothers bulled their way in, half awake and armed. Irina and Anna Ivanovna crowded into the opposite doorway. The servants milled here and there, crossing themselves or praying or clutching one another. And then her father came, big and steady, his sword in one hand. He forced his way, cursing, between clusters of terrified servants.
"Hush," he said to the milling people.
Father Constantine burst in on his heels. It was little Agafya, the maidservant, who was screaming. She sat bolt upright on her pallet. Her white-knuckled hands clutched the wool of her blanket. She had bitten into her lower lip so that the blood bloomed on her chin, and a ring of white showed around her unblinking eyes. The screams sliced the air, like icicles falling from the eaves outside. Basya pushed her way through the frightened people. She seized the girl by the shoulders.
"Agafya, listen to me," she said. "Listen. It's all right. You are safe. All is well. Hush now. Hush."
She held the girl tightly, and after a moment Agafya moaned and fell silent. Her wide eyes slowly focused on Vasya's face. Her throat worked. She tried to speak. Vasya strained to hear.
"He came for my sins," she choked.
She heaved for breath. A small boy crawled through the crowd.
"Mother," he cried. "Mother."
He flung himself on her, but she did not heed. Irina was suddenly there, her small face grave. "She has fainted," the child said seriously. "She needs air and water."
"It is only a nightmare," said Father Constantine to Piotr. "Best to leave her to the women."
Piotr might have replied, but no one heard, for Vasya cried out then in shock and sudden fury. The entire room convulsed in new fright. Vasya was staring at the window. Then,
"No," she said, visibly gathering herself. "Forgive me. Nothing. It was nothing."
Piotr frowned. The servants looked at her with open suspicion and murmured among themselves. Dunya shuffled to Vasya, her breath rustling hollow in her chest.
"Girls always have nightmares when the weather changes," Dunya wheezed, loud enough for the room to hear. "Go on, child, fetch water and honey wine."
She gave Vasya a hard look. Vasya said nothing. Her glance strayed once more to the window. For an instant, she could have sworn she'd seen a face, but it could not be, for it was the face out of her dream, blue-scarred and one-eyed. It had grinned and winked at her through the wavering ice. As soon as it was light the next morning, Vasya went looking for the domovoy. She searched until the watery sun was high and into the brief afternoon, shirking her work. The sun was tilting west when she managed to drag the creature surreptitiously out of the oven. His beard was smoldering around the edges. He was thin and bent, his clothes shabby, his manner defeated.
"Last night," Vasya said without preamble, cradling a burned hand, "I dreamed of a face, and then I saw it at the window. It had one eye, and it was smiling. Who was it?"
"Madness," mumbled the domovoy. "Appetite. The sleeper. The eater. I could not keep it out."
"You must try harder," snapped Vasya.
But the domovoy's gaze wandered and his mouth drooped open.
"I am weak," he slurred. "And the woodguard is weak. Our enemy has loosened his chain. Soon he will be free. I cannot keep him out."
"Who is the enemy?"
"Appetite," said the domovoy again. "Madness. Terror. He wants to eat the world."
"How can I defeat it?" said Vasya urgently. "How may the house be protected?"
"Offerings," muttered the domovoy. "Bread and milk will strengthen me, and perhaps blood. But you are only one girl alone, and I cannot take my life from you. I will fade. The eater will come again."
Vasya seized the domovoy and shook him so that his jaws clacked together. His dull eyes cleared, and he looked momentarily astonished.
"You will not fade," Vasya snapped. "You can take your life from me. You will. The one-eyed man, the eater, he will not get in again. He will not."
There was no milk, but Vasya stole bread
and shoved it into the domovoi's hand. She did it that night and every night thereafter, scanting her own meals. She cut her hand and smeared the blood on sills and before the oven. She pressed her bloody hand to the domovoi's mouth. Her ribs started through her skin, her eyes grew hollow, and nightmares dogged her sleeping. But the nights slipped past, one, two, a dozen, and no one else screamed at something that was not there. The wavering domovoi held, and she poured her strength into him. But little Agafia never spoke sense again. Sometimes she would plead with things that no one could see, saints and angels and a one-eyed bear. Later she raved of a man and a white horse. One night she ran out of the house, collapsed blue-lipped in the snow, and died. The women prepared the body with as much haste as was seemly. Father Constantine kept vigil beside her, white to the lips, head bent, with a face no one could read. Though he knelt for hours at her side, he never once prayed aloud. The words seemed to catch in his straining throat. They buried Agafia in the brief winter daylight while the forest groaned around them. In the swift falling twilight, they hurried to huddle before their ovens. Agafia's child cried for his mother. His wailing hung like mist over the silent village. The night after the funeral, a dream seized Dunya like sickness, like the jaws of a hunting creature. She was standing in a dead forest, strewn with the stumps of blackened trees. An oily smoke veiled the flinching stars. Firelight flickered against the snow. The frost demon's face was a skull mask with the skin drawn tight. His soft voice frightened Dunya worse than shouting. "Why have you delayed?" Dunya gathered all her force. "I love her," she said. "She is like my own daughter. You are winter, Morozko. You are death. You are cold. You cannot have her. She will give her life to God." The frost demon laughed bitterly. "She will die in the dark. Every day my brother's power waxes. And she saw him when she should not have. Now he knows what she is. He will slay her if he can, and take her for his own. Then you well may talk of damnation." Morozko's voice softened a very little. "I can save her," he said. "I can save you all. But she must have that jewel. Otherwise..." And Dunya saw that the flickering firelight was her own village burning. The forest filled with creeping things whose faces she knew. Greatest among them was a grinning one-eyed man, and beside him stood another shape, tall and slender, corpse-pale, lank-haired. "You let me die," the specter said in Vasya's voice, and her teeth gleamed between bloody lips. Dunya found herself seizing the necklace and holding it out. It made a tiny scrap of brightness in a world formless and dark. "I did not know," Dunya stammered. She reached for the dead girl, the necklace swinging from her fist. "Vasya, take it! Vasya!" But the one-eyed man only laughed, and the girl made no sign. Then the frost demon put himself between her and horror, seized her shoulders with hard, icy hands. "You have no time, Avdotya Mikhailovna," he said. "Next time you see me, I will beckon and you will follow." His voice was the voice of the wood. It seemed to echo in her bones, vibrate in her throat. Dunya felt her guts twist with fear and with certainty. "But you can save her before you go," he went on. "You must save her. Give her the necklace. Save them all." "I will," whispered Dunya. "It will be as you say. I swear it. I swear." And then her own voice woke her. But the chill of that burnt forest, of the frost demon's touch, lingered. Dunya's bones shook until it seemed they would shake through her skin. All she could see was the frost demon,
intent and despairing, and the laughing face of his brother, the one-eyed creature. The two faces blurred into one. The blue stone in her pocket seemed to drip icy flame. Her skin cracked and blackened when her hand closed tight around it. Chapter 20. A Gift from a Stranger. Vasya went to the horses every morning at first light during those clipped metallic days, only a little after her father. They had a kinship in this, to fear so passionately for the animals. At night, the horses were put in the dvor, safe behind the palisade, and as many as would fit were sheltered in the sturdy stable. But during the day, they were turned loose to fend for themselves, roaming the gray pastures and digging grass from beneath the snow. One bright, bitter morning, not long before midwinter, Vasya ran the horses into the field, whooping, riding the bareback Mish. But once the horses were settled, the girl dismounted and looked the mare over, frowning. Her ribs were beginning to show through her brown coat, not from want, but from waiting. "He will come again," the mare said. "Can you smell it?" Vasya had not the nose of a horse, but she turned into the wind. For an instant, the smell of rotting leaves and pestilence closed her throat. "Yes," she said grimly, coughing. "The dogs smell it too. They whine when the men set them loose and run for their kennels. But I will not let him hurt you." She began her round, going from horse to horse, with withered apple cores, poultices, and soft words. Mish followed her like a dog. At the edge of the herd, Buran scraped the ground with a forehoof and bugled a challenge to the waiting wood. "Be easy," said Vasya. She came alongside the stallion and put a hand on his hot crest. He was furious as a stallion that sees a rival among his mares, and he almost kicked her before he got hold of himself. "Let him come." He reared, lashing out with his forefeet. "This time I will kill him." Vasya dodged the flying hooves, pressing her body to his. "Wait," she said into his ear. The horse spun, snapping his teeth, but she clung close and he could not reach her. She kept her voice quiet. "Keep your strength." Stallions obey mares. Buran put his head down. "You must be strong and calm when it comes," said Vasya. "Your brother," said Mish. Vasya turned to see Alyosha, hatless, running toward her out the palisade gate. In an instant, Vasya had her forearm behind Mish's withers, and then she was on the horse's back. The mare galloped across the field, kicking up the frozen glaze. The sturdy pasture fence loomed, but Mish cleared the barrier and ran on. Vasya met Alyosha just outside the palisade. "It is Dunya," said Alyosha. "She will not wake. She is saying your name." "Come on," said Vasya, and Alyosha sprang up behind her. The kitchen was hot. The oven roared and gaped like a mouth. Dunya lay atop the oven, open-eyed and unseeing, still except for her twitching hands. She muttered to herself now and again, her brittle skin stretched over her bones, so tight that Vasya thought she could see the ebbing blood. She climbed quickly atop the oven. "Dunya," she said. "Dunya, wake up. It is I. It is Vasya." The open eyes blinked once, but that was all. Vasya felt a moment of panic. She forced it down. Irina and Anna knelt side by side before the icon corner, praying. The tears slid down Irina's face. She wasn't pretty when she cried. "Hot water," snapped Vasya, turning round. "Irina, for God's sake, praying will not keep her warm. Make soup." Anna looked up with venomous eyes, but Irina, with surprising quickness, got to her feet and filled the pot. All that day, Vasya sat at Dunya's side, hunched atop the oven.
She packed blankets around her nurse's shriveled body and tried to coax broth down her throat. But the liquid dribbled out of her mouth, and she would not wake. All that long day the clouds drifted in, and the daylight darkened. In the late afternoon, Dunya sucked in a breath as though she meant to swallow the world, and caught at Vasya's hands. Vasya jerked back in surprise. The strength in her old nurse's grip astonished her.
Dunya, she said.
The old lady's eyes wandered.
I did not know, she whispered. I did not see.
You will be all right, said Vasya.
He has one eye. No, he has blue eyes. They are the same. They are brothers. Vasya, remember.
And then her hand fell away, and she lay still, mumbling to herself. Vasya spooned more hot drinks down Dunya's throat. Irina kept the fire roaring. But the old lady's pulse faded with the daylight. She ceased to mutter and lay open-eyed.
Not yet,
she said to the empty corner, and sometimes she cried.
Please, she said then. Please.
The feeble day flickered, and a hush fell over house and village. Alyosha went out for firewood. Irina went to tend to her peevish mother. When Konstantin's voice broke the silence, Vasya nearly leaped out of her skin.
Does she live?
He said. The shadows lay across him like a woven mantle.
Yes, Vasya said. I will pray with her, he said.
You will not, snapped Vasya, too weary and frightened for courtesy. She is not going to die.
Konstantin came nearer. I can ease her pain.
No, Vasya repeated. She was going to cry. She is not going to die. As you love God, I beg you, go.
She is dying, Vasilisa Petrovna. This is my place.
She is not!
Vasya's voice came wrenching from her throat.
She is not dying. I am going to save her.
She will be dead by morning.
You want my people to love you, so you made them afraid.
Vasya was pale with fury.
I will not have Dunya afraid. Get out!
Konstantin opened his mouth, then closed it again. Abruptly he turned and left the kitchen. Vasya forgot him at once. Dunya had not wakened. She lay still, her pulse a thread. Her breathing barely felt on Vasya's unsteady hand. Night fell. Alyosha and Irina returned. The kitchen filled briefly with a subdued bustle as the evening meal was served. Vasya could not eat. The hour drew on and the kitchen emptied once more until it was only they four, Dunya and Vasya, Irina and Alyosha. The latter two dozed on the oven. Vasya was nodding herself.
Vasya, said Dunya.
Vasya jerked awake with a sob. Dunya's voice was feeble but lucid.
You're all right, Dunyashka. I knew you would be.
Dunya smiled toothlessly.
Yes, she said. He is waiting.
Who is waiting? Dunya did not answer. She was struggling for breath.
Vasochka, she said. I have something your father gave me to keep for you. I must give it to you now.
Later, Dunyashka, said Vasya. You must rest now. But Dunya was already fumbling for her skirt pocket with one stiff hand. Vasya opened the pocket for her and withdrew something hard, wrapped in a scrap of soft cloth.
Open it, whispered Dunya.
Vasya obeyed. The necklace was made of some pale, glittering metal, brighter than silver, and shaped like a snowflake, or a many-rayed star. A jewel of silver blue burned in the center. Anna had no jewels to equal it. Vasya had never seen anything so fine.
But what is it? She asked, bewildered. A talisman,
said Dunya, struggling for breath. There is power in it. Keep it hidden. Do not speak of it. If your father asks, tell him you know nothing of it.
Madness.
A line formed between Vasya's brows, but she slipped the chain over her head. It swung between her breasts, invisible under her clothes. Suddenly, Dunya went rigid, her dry fingers scrabbling at Vasya's arm.
His brother, she hissed. He is angry that you have the jewel. Vasya, Vasya, you must...
She choked and fell silent. From without, there came a long, savage chuckle. Vasya froze, heart hammering.
Again? Last time I was dreaming.
Then came a scrape, the soft sound of a dragging foot, another and another. Vasya swallowed. Noiseless, she slid off the oven. The domovoy was crouching at the oven mouth, frail and intent.
It cannot get in, said the domovoy, fierce. I will not let it. I will not.
Vasya laid a hand on his head and crept to the door. In winter, nothing smells of rot outdoors, but on the threshold, she caught a whiff of decay that turned her empty stomach. There came a flare of burning cold where the jewel lay over her breastbone. She made a low sound of pain.
Wake, Alyosha. Wake the house. But what was it? The domovoy says he will not let it in. I will go and see, Vasya thought. I am not afraid.
She slipped out the kitchen door.
No, breathed Dunya from the oven. Vasya, no.
She turned her head a little.
Save her, she whispered to the empty air. Save her, and I care not if your brother comes for me.
Whatever it was, it stank like nothing else. Death and pestilence and hot metal. Vasya followed the track of the dragging footsteps. There, a quick movement in the shadow of the house. She saw a thing like a woman, hunched down small, wearing a white wrapper that trailed in the snow. It moved crabwise, as though it had too many joints. Vasya gathered her courage and crept nearer. The thing darted from window to window, pausing at each, sometimes reaching out a flinching hand, never touching the sill. But at the last window, that of the priest, it went taut. Its eyes gleamed red. Vasya ran forward. The domovoy said it could not get in, but a swipe of a bloodless fist ripped the ice from its mooring in the window frame. Vasya saw a flash of gray skin in the moonlight. The trailing white garment was a winding sheet, and the creature was naked beneath.
Dead, Vasya thought. That thing is dead.
The grayish, weeping hands seized the high sill of Constantine's window, and it, she, for Vasya caught a glimpse of long matted hair, flung itself into the room. Vasya paused beneath the window, then followed the thing up and over. She pulled herself through with brute strength. It was pitch black inside. The thing crouched, snarling, over a thrashing figure on the bed. The shadows on the wall seemed to swell, as though they would burst out of the wood. Vasya thought she heard a voice.
The girl. Leave him. He's mine already. Take the girl. Take her.
The pain in her breastbone goaded her. The jewel was burning with a fiery cold. Without thinking, Vasya raised a hand and shouted. The creature on the bed whirled, face black with blood.
Take her,
snarled the shadow voice again. The dead thing's white teeth caught the moonlight as it gathered itself to spring. Suddenly, Vasya realized that there was someone else beside her. Not a dead woman, nor a voice made of shadows, but a man in a dark cloak.
She could not see his face in the darkness. Whoever this other was, he seized her hand and dug his fingers into her palm. Vasya swallowed a cry.
You are dead.